Play. I'm Madeline Brand. The biggest film franchise of them all has a new installment out this weekend, and here to tell us about that and the other latest releases are Amy Nicholson, chief film critic for MTV News and host of the new movie podcast called Skill Set. Hi.
Hello.
And Whitney Seibold, a contributor to Crave Online. Hi.
Hello.
Okay, Rogue One, that's the one. No spoiler. Star Wars Story, this is the eighth film in the Star Wars pantheon, and here's a clip from the trailer.
The world is coming undone. Imperial flags reign across the galaxy.
Can you be trusted without your shackles?
Let's just get this over with, shall we?
We have a mission for you. A major weapons test is imminent. We need to know how to destroy it.
All right. Amy, I've kind of lost track where we are in the whole pantheon, as I said, the whole story. Where does this one fit in?
Well, Rogue One is supposed to be a different kind of Star Wars story. It's the first one that doesn't have a Roman numeral in the title. It's the first one that's supposed to be outside of the normal timeline that we rebooted last year.
Theatrically, there have actually been two TV movies that people conveniently forget rather frequently with Ewoks in them.
Wait, does that also include the Star Wars Christmas movie that shall never be discussed?
No, in fact, that additionally, there's also the cartoon movie everyone forgets. So technically, this is the 12th film in the pantheon.
Wow. Okay, wow. Now I'm truly confused.
Me too.
But the first theatrical, we can agree on that?
Yes.
Okay, the first theatrical one. And I was looking forward to Rogue One because I thought this was where the franchise could go somewhere totally different, where we could see aliens and characters and explore worlds that we never had to see again because they don't have to fit into this mythos.
Yeah.
Instead, Rogue One is just built on a disappointment. Instead of breaking free of the timeline, what they decide to do is flesh out a story that George Lucas got through in the opening 30 seconds of Star Wars. If you ever saw that opening crawl, and we all have, it opens by saying that the rebels have just won their first battle and that Princess Leia has plans to the Death Star. Rogue One is about how she gets those plans.
I feel like we've been spiraling inward on Star Wars ever since the beginning. We had this great film in 1977. It was a big hit. And ever since then, we've just been examining the same characters and the same stories without really kind of seeing what the Star Wars universe has to offer. Now, when The Force Awakens came out, the story from The Force Awakens is very similar to that of Star Wars. Like beat for beat, character for character.
Mm-hmm. And people really liked that.
People liked that, but even if that bothered you, that the story was kind of repeated, you can kind of forgive the studio for wanting to take that approach because they're starting this up again.
Yeah.
They need something safe that the fans can sort of get behind. And now that that's out of the way, we had an opportunity to sort of expand and see maybe there's front lines beyond what Darth Vader was on. But no, we want to sort of continue to regress and look inward. And it's particularly disheartening to think that this is all we're going to have going forward. That the studio has no interest in expanding or exploring what Star Wars has to offer, that they're only going to start pandering more and more tightly to, frankly, a huge fan base, but still just pandering to a fan base.
Well, it's a safe bet, and it looks like it was a good bet because it made tons of money yesterday, and it will continue to the rest of the month.
That's true. And I think in this culture, seeing a Star Wars movie is like going to church. You just feel like you have to so that you're able to talk to everybody else about it. It's almost a duty. It's almost like it's in our constitution. But I will say I'm looking forward to the next Star Wars because that one is going to be directed by Rian Johnson, who did Looper. He's a fantastic filmmaker. I feel like a giant nerd, but I have all my fingers crossed that that one will be the adventure I want.
But it sounds like you guys are outliers because I'm looking at Rotten Tomatoes and most critics like this movie.
Most critics are giving it a pass for what it's worth. It's not an incompetent film. The director is Gareth Edwards.
Who
did Godzilla, and he previously did an indie film called Monsters. And I've seen these films, and he is, now we know, notoriously bad for sort of thin character work. You think of Godzilla, you don't think of any of the human characters. You want to see the monster.
Yeah.
And here, it's like we don't want to see any of the human characters in Star Wars. We just want to see Star Wars stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And fans are really happy because there's a lot of it. We get to see
Darth Vader. Funny robot?
There's a comic relief robot.
Robot is way too funny. The robot has all of the jokes. And at a certain point, you're like, there is no robot that just tells jokes. Because at least in the original franchise, the joke was on C-3PO.
Yeah.
He would say things and people would laugh at him. This robot is seriously like pandering for quips. He's like standing up with a mic. He's like, try the veal. And you're like, nothing like, this is not programmable.
In fact, you look at sort of that wisecracking robot, and I'm reminded of films like Star Crash. This feels a lot more like one of those cheap Star Wars knockoffs than it does an actual Star Wars movie. But it's a big budget Star Wars movie.
Okay, let's move on to a new Will Smith film. It's called Collateral Beauty. And here's a bite from the trailer.
We're here to connect. Love, time, death. Now, these three things connect every single human being on Earth. We long for love. We wish we had more time. And we fear death.
Did you lose a child, Howard?
Okay, this is kind of a crazy plot. Who wants at it?
Would you like to take a crack
at
it?
I'll take a crack at it. All right. So Will Smith has this obsession with doing high-concept wackadoodle films. I mean, did you guys see 7 Pounds, the one where he electrocutes himself to death in a bathtub with a jellyfish?
No, so that missed that one.
Oh, so he can donate his organs to strangers he's been stalking?
Hmm.
This is like the
7 pounds of his body, you see.
What Collateral Beauty is about is that he's a depressed business owner, and the three people of his company who are right below him, who are worried the company is crashing, that's Michael Peña, Kate Winslet, and Edward Norton, decide that they should stalk him to figure out how they can gain control of the company. And then they realize that when he's been writing letters to characters called Love, Death, and Time, that they should hire actors to play Love, Death, and Time, stalk him throughout the streets of New York, convince him he's crazy by having him yell at people that nobody else pretends like they can see, and then somehow they're also his best friends and they're healing him?
So this is also they can wrest control of the company?
If the movie was about just trying to heal him, he's in trouble and they want to do this sort of arch art project, this sort of public theater thing, that he doesn't realize he's involved in. That would be one thing, and that might be kind of an interesting story. But so much of this film, in fact, the entire first third of this film almost seems devoted to this plot where they have to prove that he's crazy and they have to wrest control of this company. And there's so much financially at stake in terms of the plot that, it starts to seem like they're doing something really kind of wicked and sinister and very cruel for their best friend.
Yeah.
By making him think
so
he's crazy.
So they're trying to do a Christmas Carol, but not...
Well, if this were more like A Christmas Carol, it would be more fun. The previews made it look like Love, Death, and Time were actual supernatural beings.
Right, that's what I thought, looking at it.
And as it turns out, no, they're just actors that were hired out of a local theater to pretend to do this. And all the people around these characters pretend like they don't see them.
This got an 11% on Rotten Tomatoes. Could it be so bad that it's worth watching?
I have to say, I read a bad review of it by my old editor, Alan Shearsall, at the Village Voice, and I immediately went out and watched it. I was so excited. I mean, it's absolutely nuts. What I can't understand, I think the great mystery, is how a script that seems like it was written by a very stoned freshman year psychology major blackmailed this amazing cast into being in the film. We've got Helen Mirren in here playing Death. This is a prestige picture that is absolutely nuts. It's fascinating.
Maybe she thought she was in a kind of a Christmas Carol remake.
Well, I think the presence of Will Smith kind of blinded everybody because Will Smith has done these sort of sentimental projects in the past, like 7 Pounds. They probably thought they were doing something very earnest and not really realizing just how kind of crazy and mean and just saccharine this whole enterprise was. The film I was most strongly reminded of was Pay It Forward, something that deals with big emotions but doesn't really understand how human emotions really function at all. It tries to approach grief from clearly somebody who has never really grieved and therapy from somebody who has never been to therapy. It reminds me, rather embarrassingly, of something I've written in the past when I was maybe 18 or 19.
Well, you better give it to Will Smith. I think you can make $1 million.
Maybe so.
Maybe
my future is ahead of me.
Maybe you should involve a jellyfish in it just to make sure. All right. Last movie this week is another film about the early life of Barack Obama. This one is called Barry, and here's a clip.
You know I'm the only black person in 4 of my 5 classes.
But you're half white, too. You can fit in anywhere.
I fit in nowhere. Too much
pride to back off of it. The world is a big place, honey. You'll find your way.
You got some ID?
I'm a student here.
ID?
Well, I don't see you IDing them. So what's so special about me? Huh?
Amy, you saw this movie, and this is about 1 year in the life of Barack Obama, wherein he's at Columbia.
It is. It begins with him on the plane chain smoking, because you can still chain smoke in 1981 when Barack Obama was 20 years old, as he cruises into Manhattan and then promptly gets lost in Harlem trying to find his way to his apartment. You know, Barry was my favorite film I saw this year at the Toronto Film Festival, and it went straight to Netflix. They scooped up at the festival. They're premiering it today on Netflix, and I'm really excited for people to see it. It's not so much a biopic of Obama, even though it definitely is, and the voice that you hear sounds so much like Obama. That's an Australian actor making his debut named Devon Terrell.
Wow.
He's phenomenal, and he just gets the carriage, the chin up, the left-handed basketball playing. He has to write left-handed,
yeah,
which is, as a left-handed myself,
me too.
I like it. Oh,
yay.
We're amazing.
Yay,
it's always nice when we can make actors do our bidding.
Great, I'm the establishment over here.
But what it ends up being is a really almost soft-hearted but just as incisive look at race in New York as something like Do the Right Thing. And I know that sounds like a big compliment, but I legitimately mean it, because what the film follows here is Obama's relationships with his friends, his relationship with his girlfriend, who's played by Anya Taylor-Joy of The Witch, and she's fantastic here. She's white, he's black, and you start to see him realize how the neighborhood treats him differently depending on who he has in his arm, and he starts to really have to wrestle with the idea of who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And where it kind of touches on the ideas of Do the Right Thing, it does it in its own way, where if Do the Right Thing is about a group of people in a neighborhood coming together and yelling and trying to make their points as loudly as possible and screaming, this is such a quiet and inward film about a man who's got all those fights just inside of himself. Like, who is he? Where does he have roots to? Why doesn't he feel like he belongs? Why does he feel like his mother is maybe the type of woman who exoticizes foreign cultures in a way that makes him uncomfortable? And he is wrestling with everything just alone and quiet. And so it's this way of watching a guy go into different situations and try to win people over with charm. And that's such a powerful way of looking at the different conflicts and the issues that come up when people try to get together.
And how much of this is actually accurate?
It's inspired a lot from Dreams from My Father, in which Barack Obama himself compiled this character of a girlfriend that he just referred to as my friend. He never gave her a name, and it turned out that it was a compilation
bunch of different,
three of his serious mm-hmm. girlfriends he had when he was in New York who were all white. It's not like beat for beat, person for person, but it feels really accurate. If you know a lot about his life, there's scenes in here that come directly from that, including the scene where his girlfriend tells him she loves him and he just gets awkward and says, thank you.
How does it compare to Southside with You, the other Barack Obama biopic earlier in the year?
You know, Southside with You is about his first date with Michelle Obama. And I feel like that film doesn't work unless you know who these two people are. And you're watching two people that you care about fall in love, and you're thinking, oh, wow, I never thought about Michelle Obama deciding what to wear when she like went out on this date with Barack Obama. This movie, I feel like, absolutely could stand alone without it being about him at all. Like, knowing it's him makes you really appreciate the impersonation that Devon Terrell is doing. But this, I think this film would be just as strong if it was about a guy who, you know, grew up to make me coffee in the morning.
But we do care that it is Barack Obama. I mean,
we do.
We do want to watch it for that reason.
I mean, we get to watch him dunk on basketballs. Oh, and also Jason Mitchell, who played Eazy-E in Straight Outta Compton, is here as a classmate, and he is fantastic.
All right. Well, so we'll end on an up note.
Yeah, it's
That's
on Netflix.
Good.
Hit a button, everybody, and you can watch one of my favorite movies of the year.
Excellent. We don't have to go out at all. Maybe ever again. Well,
maybe ever again.
I would encourage certain films in theaters from time to time. That would be nice.
Okay. Well, maybe not this week. Whitney Seibold, contributor to Crave Online, and Amy Nicholson, chief film critic for MTV News and host of the movie podcast Skill Set. Thank you both.
Thank you.
This is Press Play. I'm Madeline Brand. Me Too, the web channel that aims for a Hispanic millennial audience. That's where you can watch videos of Latina moms trying vegan food for the first time. Spoiler, they hate it. Also, clips of self-proclaimed cholos giving hipster fashion a whirl.
For $35, it's got to be made out of hemp at least, bro. Is it made out of hemp? Look. Is that a little kale chip plant?
Well, Me Too announced this week it's partnering with Snapchat. Christina Lopez-G is a senior researcher on Hispanic media for Media Matters for America. That's a media watchdog. She joins me now to talk about the changes in the Hispanic media landscape. Welcome.
Oh, hi, Madeline. How are you?
Great, thanks. Well, for those of us who don't know about Me Too, can you describe it? What is it?
So Me Too is, for all intents and purposes, a network. The only difference is that it's not a channel that functions on TV. It's entirely digital. Since its inception, it started to provide programs and it was based specifically on YouTube. And now they are partnering up with Snapchat to bring this content to this application that is centrally mobile.
So that's an expansion for Me Too, and it also is good for Snapchat, right? Because it brings
Correct.
In a new audience.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so what kind of content would you see if you're watching Me Too?
So it's different things. It's mostly a lifestyle, multicultural network. And so you get from cooking shows to pop culture to sports commentary to even vlogs and comedy shows. And I don't know if show is the right word, because the way that they are structured works in the same way that many shows on YouTube are structured, which work from like a testimonial perspective.
All right. So that's entertainment. You've got cooking, pop culture, as you mentioned, sports. What about news? Where are Hispanic millennials getting their news?
So they are definitely a reflection of how the media landscape has increasingly fragmented in the past couple of years. With the social media boom, increasingly Hispanics get their news on mobile applications, whether that's Snapchat or Facebook, which is what explains increasingly the surge in networks like Me Too that is only or mostly based in on online. In a lot of ways, BuzzFeed is trying this approach too with their vertical that's called Pero Like. With Pero Like, they are attracting the Hispanic audience in the same way that Me Too is doing with the entertainment and the lifestyle sort of content, but they need that to get audiences to their news content. So they use it as a way to first hook millennials and Hispanic millennials, but then they can direct them to their news content, which is a little more substantial.
And Fusion is now partnered with Univision, and Univision bought up the Gawker franchise, so Gizmodo, Deadspin, Jezebel. What is Univision trying to do?
Well, it's an interesting partnership because Univision was very aware of how the demographic they're trying to court was increasingly not watching telenovelas and not needing to watch Spanish language media as much. Spanish language media for the longest time was the tool that many, specifically immigrants, but many Spanish speakers used to understand how to navigate America. And what Univision got relatively early in the game was that this population was increasingly shrinking as their more, let's say, Americanized kids were now being that tool. We're now helping them navigate America because they were bilingual, and not only bilingual, they were bicultural. So they invested in Fusion, which is, at first it was just targeting the Hispanic population, the bilingual Hispanic population, but then they realized the potential that there is in just targeting multiculturalism in general. It's very hard to predict whether this investment by Univision is going to play out or not, but it is strategically a smart move that means that they're reading the demographics, they're reading the demographic changes.
Right. So they also own The Root, which is an African-American site. And also...
And The Onion.
Yeah, part of The Onion. So it seems like they are trying to attract a broad audience.
And now, increasingly, that makes sense because if you're trying to pitch content and in your content you're able to have many different demographics be able to relate to it, it's more likely that they're going to share it. And it's more likely that it's going to disseminate throughout their network faster than it would if you were only trying to target one specific demographic or one specific story.
Mm-hmm. So that idea of having like a separate channel for Latinos and a separate channel for millennials and whatever, that idea that mainstream companies had a while ago, that's dead.
It seems that way. In fact, most of the verticals of many companies that started their own, NBC News Latino, for example, closed. And CNN Latino also tried to do the same thing. And it's just, it doesn't really pan out because people are trying, they're not trying to go to a specific channel where they are just going to get a very specific type of content. At the end of the day, Latinos in the U.S. are also Americans, and they're part of the American experience.
Cristina Lopez-G is a senior researcher on Hispanic media for Media Matters for America. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Madeline.
And that will do it for us at Press Play. You can always reach us on Twitter at KCRW Press Play, Facebook KCRW Press Play. I'm Madeline Brand. I'll see you tomorrow.